Okay, thanks, Andy. Hopefully, the contribution that I'll make this afternoon will begin to answer some of the questions that people have raised today. In particular, what I want to try and concentrate on is how the first dispute that I was ever involved in as a young shop steward had just been elected within the Union of Post Office Workers, as it was known. A dispute that started off in August 1976 when a young postal worker from Cricklewood Delivery Office in northwest London walked up to the factory gates, a factory called Grumwick, to be met by five women of colour who had been sacked because they wanted to form a trade union. And that postal worker refused to cross the picket line, took the mail back to Cricklewood Postal Delivery Office, and from there there was a massive escalation in terms of refusing to touch, handle, sort or deliver any of the mail for Grumwick and its owner George Ward. And that was the first dispute that I was ever involved in, because quite simply in Liverpool we refused to handle that mail as well. And one of the reasons that Royal Mail or the Post Office then did not try to discipline us was quite simply they didn't know what to do. And when I mean that, I'll have to sketch you an outline of what it was like working for the Post Office back in the 70s. The Post Office was a military type organisation, very, very top down. It was full of people who'd been in the Army and the Navy from the Second World War, who were used to taking orders from managers and supervisors, without question. The trade union reflected the organisation of the Post Office, very top down. What we in Liverpool and in Merseyside launched from Grumwick onwards was a whole series of demands to democratise the Union of Post Office Workers. Because what had happened in the 1970s was there was massive, a whole range of job vacancies across the Post Office, and in particular within Liverpool, those vacancies were filled by ex-dock workers and ex-seafarers who had a history of struggle within their own trade unions to wrestle power from the top and bring it back down to the rank and file. And that's what part of the struggle that took place in the 70s, that was what it was about within that particular trade union. And it did succeed, because within 10 years of being one of the most right-wing trade unions within the TUC, within 10 years of that, by the mid-1980s, the whole industry had become an industry with the worst industrial relations record, the highest level of unofficial disputes. I was proud by that time to be a full-time official in Liverpool, because we had the worst record of unofficial disputes, to a degree that by the early 1990s, Royal Mail had honed in on the sorting office in Liverpool and decided to close it. And we were very, very lucky that we managed to, at that time, we managed to link up with the sacked Liverpool dock workers, and we managed to mobilise a massive campaign, not just locally but nationally and internationally, to keep that sorting office open. But ultimately what I touched upon before was the trade unionism of dockers and seafarers that was brought into the Post Office on Merseyside. And I have to say, you see, that tradition, I would argue, is totally a different tradition that you would find in the mill towns and the steelworks of other parts of the north of England. Quite simply, the tradition of dockers and seafarers is an international tradition. I would strongly argue that the internationalism came from and was sustained by the links with the industrial workers of the world that took place in Liverpool from 1909 onwards. Very close links from Lucille Parsons, wonderful woman, Afro-American woman of colour, Big Bill Haywood, Joe Hill, James Larkin, James Connolly. Those were the traditions of the sea and the docks. But also, I might add, it was also linked to the impossibility of imposing industrial discipline on seafarers and dockers whose time was not of the clock, it was of the dock. And this sometimes gets forgotten when we talk about labour history. What I mean by that is that Liverpool and its seafaring and dock work history was always linked to the tides. The most difficult tidal region in the whole of Europe. So it was not tied to the clock, it was tied to the tide of the dock. And that is why, from the 1970s onwards, whether it was Fort Aylward or Plessies or the post office, the influx of those workers who did not, would not, and could not accept conventional time discipline, it was the influx of those workers that changed beyond a shadow of a doubt those big industrial units on Merseyside. And I said before, it is also the reason why one of the most right-wing unions within the TUC 10 years later had shifted and continued to shift its position continually until by the mid-90s and even up to periods of today, the Communication Workers Union would see itself on a progressive wing of the TUC. Now, some of the points that have been made around what's gone wrong and what happened in the 1970s. Quite simply, the way militancy was cut off was based on the fact that the TUC entered into a whole series of agreements with the Labour government to produce what they would consider and what we considered at the time to be a whole series of progressive legislation. I would strongly argue that, alongside the closed shop, made trade unions lazy, it made them arrogant, and that is why a lot of trade unions could never agitate, they couldn't educate, and they couldn't organise. And I still think that is still prevalent today. What we also forget is the fact that our history, labour history, has always told us that somehow craft unions were progressive organisations. I would argue strongly against that and say craft unions predominantly were organisations to exclude. They excluded women, and in particular, they excluded people of colour. And if the history of the IWW teaches us anything, it teaches us that particular area of trade unionism cannot be called progressive, cannot be called inclusive, can only be called defensive and exclusive. What lessons can we draw from today? For today? Well, we're in the process in Liverpool. We're coming up to the centenary of the Great Liverpool Transport Strike that took place in May and June 1911. It was where the city was under martial law for nearly 4 months. Dock workers, seafarers and railway workers were out on strike. Winston Churchill had gunboats on the Mersey pointed at the docks and at particular areas in the north end of the city that saw continuing rioting. In the forefront of those riots were women of those communities. Unfortunately, those women have not had a history, because the way the history has been written about 1911, we hope to challenge that. So 1911 in Liverpool was not about Tom Mann, this supposed syndicalist leader, who in 1909 was in South Africa organising all-white trade unions. And he said at the time he would not organise or wouldn't allow blacks into those unions because they weren't human enough. Part of the problem, because what we're going to be posing in Liverpool next year is a challenge to that type of history. It wasn't about Tom Mann, it wasn't about the seafarers leader or the dockers leaders, it was this massive rank and file revolt that had taken place in Liverpool, which we would argue can't be separated from what was going on in New York, Detroit, and what was going on in Mexico with the Mexican Revolution. Because the sea at that time was and could be seen as the first information superhighway. So with all these global events that are going on, to believe that seafarers were actually silent when they were coming into contact with other groups of workers globally, to actually believe that they were silent and weren't taking in any of that, I think is absolute nonsense. But the lead up to 1911, you know, you can read radical books at the time or newspapers who, as we went into 1911 itself, January, February, March and April, were bemoaning the fact that there was no radicalism, bemoaning the fact that the workers' movement seemed to be finished, bemoaning the fact that there was no strife or any challenge to the conventional authority at the time. Yet by June 1911, not just Liverpool, but London, Glasgow, South Wales coalfields had all gone up in this conflagration.
And Bristol.
And Bristol, that's right. And Bristol, sorry. Had all gone up in this mass conflagration, whereby Virginia Woolf at the time wrote, 1911 is where all human nature changed. So I think we can take heart from that. I don't accept the fact that we've got to start looking at stuff and, well, why isn't it going there and why isn't that happening there? I just think it will happen. It is bound to happen, and it'll probably be in places that we don't even realise that it will happen. So I'll leave you on that note. Thank you.